12. The Creation of Christianity. The Syrians from Sirius A were in a unique situation. On the one hand, their loyalty was pledged to the Orion Queens by virtue of the alliance. So they were obliged by that agreement to take no actions contrary to the interests of the reptilians. However, they did have an agenda of their own, and here on this small planet, on the very edge of the galaxy, they did not feel constrained enough to worry about a reptilian reaction to real or imagined violations of the agreement. While they feared a full-scale reptilian attack, that would not be likely for small indiscretions. Furthermore, the reptilian population on Earth was hobbled by having to live underground, and they were cut off from communication with Draco and Orion. So the Syrians adopted a double standard. They continued to help the reptilians here in very important ways. It was their technology that made the shape-shifting program possible, and they assisted in the hybridization program in other ways. However, they also implemented their own plans, especially in the area of religion. In terms of hybridization, the Syrians were more experienced and sophisticated than the reptilians, who were stranded here, cut off from their technology in Orion. Before Atlantis sank beneath the waves, the Syrians followed the Atlantean migration to Egypt. They wanted to create hybrid Atlant Syrians, that is, Lyran Syrians, which they believed would create a magnificent new race on Earth, amenable to Syrian influence. With Atlantis gone, they believed this was the best alternative for recreating Lyran culture on Earth. However, they did not have reptilian approval for this plan. This created race was the earliest subrace of Hebrews, Swerdlow says. These people were tall and powerful, and spoke in Syrian language, which is the equivalent to the ancient Hebrew language. Scholars agree that the Hebrew language suddenly appeared on the scene. Originally, Hebrew was a language used exclusively by the Jewish priesthood and the Egyptian secret society. The Egyptian priesthood had its own hieroglyphic language reserved for religious communications. The Hebrews were not really slaves in Egypt, but were paid workers. The Egyptians also used them as foreign agents. They were sent to Canaan to try to absorb the Canaanites into the Egyptian empire. There, they mixed with the Sumerian hybrid descendants and adopted some of their reptilian blood ritual and human sacrifice practices. About this, Swerdlow says, all of this was incorporated into a conglomerate religion based on ancient Egyptian, Atlantean, Syrian beliefs. That is how Judaism was born. The story of Abraham being commanded by God to sacrifice his own son was one of the results of that religion. It was an acceptable command in a religion that practiced human sacrifice. However, the Hebrews changed that practice to animal sacrifices. That was the more civilized Jewish version of the barbaric human sacrifices practiced by the reptilian hybrids in both the Middle East and in Central and South America. The Brotherhood and the Syrians understood well the power of religion to control and direct the lives of their subjects. The Orion Queens had learned that lesson eons ago and used religion to control their far-flung galactic empire. The dispersion of the Jews from Egypt throughout the Middle East was based on a deliberate fast-track plan to spread the new religion and its practices in those areas. It was intended that Judaism would become the universal religion of the new humanity. Swerdlow tells us, the Middle East became a focal point for the Syrians and their reptilian allies. Together, they generated a new version of religion and culture for ease of global control and domination. What better way to do that than by programming a race of nomadic people that would carry the religion and culture everywhere on the earth? The Brotherhood was planning way, way ahead. Their ultimate goal was globalization. In order to create a uniform global population, which they could then easily control, they knew that they needed a uniform global religion. The Exodus was watched over by Syrian spacecraft, and the Jewish emigrants were given help in their wanderings, when necessary. If the Syrians could hollow out asteroids and propel them with black holes, they certainly had the technology to part the Red Sea. And the manna that floated down from heaven to feed the starving Jewish tribes was a scientifically designed food to provide maximum nutrition and energy. The new religion was supplemented with new strictures along the way by Moses, who communicated with the Syrian craft from the top of Mount Sinai and was given the Ten Commandments, which were engraved in crystals. The laws that composed the Torah were carried in the Ark of the Covenant, which was an electromagnetic receiver and was highly charged, which was why it could only be approached by the priests who wore protective clothing. And only the priests could decipher the messages from God received by the Ark in the Hebrew language. According to Swerdlow, Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed by atomic bombs because their people's widespread homosexual practices had propagated the AIDS virus, which had to be contained. He claims that even today, atomic radiation can be detected at those sites. The advent of Emmanuel. The Federation continued to oppose the spread of reptilian blue bloods and hybrids throughout the civilized world. Swerdlow says, with Syrian cooperation, they were working to gently push the post-Atlantean remnants back into Lyran culture, now that the reptilian hybrids were taking over. Of course, this isolated Lyran group did not realize the current treacherous Syrian Earth involvement. When someone is friends with everyone, they are really friends with no one. The Syrians were playing both sides, while also seeking to advance their own agenda. The Federation realized that they needed a highly evolved human hybrid to redirect the new religion. According to Swerdlow, this group abducted a young woman from ancient Israel from extremely pure humanoid genetics, implanting her with a fetus genetically designed for a specific purpose. Today, this woman is known as Mary, and this is why it is claimed that she was a virgin. There was a persona named Emmanuel. He was a product of the mixture between Mary and a Lyran descendant. Mary was physically abducted and implanted. She said that she was visited by angels. As a young man, Emmanuel was removed from his mother and taken to the Great Pyramid on the Giza Plateau. Here he was taught ancient Lyran, Atlantean, and Egyptian principles for many years. He was also taken aboard the Federation ships and indoctrinated in ways to steer the masses away from the reptilian influences. His orders were to inculcate the three strains of humanity that had the purest Aryan genetics on Earth. These were the Hebrews, created by the Syrians, the Germanic tribes, created by the Aldebarans, and the northern Indian Aryans, who now lived in the foothills of the Himalayas. All three peoples used a lion as their symbol, and were descendants of the original blonde-haired, blue-eyed Lyrans. The Federation creates Christianity. Emmanuel, or Jesus, did his job well. He was well chosen and well trained. His indoctrination on the Federation ships prepared him for his ordeal. But it was really the power of his own soul and spirit that allowed him to succeed against all odds. Set down as he was, amid hostile factions on all sides, he dared to promote a new belief system in the face of a then belief-hardened and ritualized Jewish priesthood and a centuries-old Roman culture based on a pantheon of gods and goddesses. Here was this gentle man in sandals, walking the hills and valleys of ancient Palestine, speaking simple but profound spiritual truths, clothed in puzzling parables and allegories. The foundation of Judaism had already been established by Moses. It was now the job of Jesus to build an edifice on that foundation, and in order to build that edifice, it was necessary to purify the message. Judaism had incorporated reptilian elements that now had to be purged. It was a religion based on law. Jesus changed it to a religion of love when he said, "The whole law is summed up in a single commandment, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. This was revolutionary. The idea of human brotherhood based on love had never been promulgated before as a religion. Always before, religion was all about the worship of gods and goddesses. It was necessary to propitiate the gods to ameliorate their wrath. The definition of propitiate is the act of appeasing or making well-disposed a deity, thus incurring divine favor. This was done by making sacrifices and dedicating burnt offerings to them. When Jesus chased the money changers out of the temple, this was an act of defiance against the brotherhood, who were monetizing religion. By offering to guarantee a happy afterlife for a few shekels, they inculcated the supreme importance of money, which they could then use to manipulate the human race. This defiance by Jesus was an act essentially repeated by Martin Luther, 1,500 years later, protesting against the sale of indulgences by the Catholic Church. The Federation plan was to spread the Judeo-Christian religious ethic, based on love and service to others, as the spiritual core of the new humanity that would inherit the earth. This, they believed, would counter the hybrid reptilian beliefs in blood rituals and human sacrifice and enslavement through mind control, the system that had worked so well on thousands of other worlds throughout the galaxy. Christianity would be a way to direct the new human population in the right spiritual direction and prevent the reptilian programming from taking hold. The Talmud of Jemmanuel. The extraterrestrial link to the advent of Jesus is supported by an ancient document unearthed in an unoccupied area just south of Jerusalem in early 1963. At that time, 4 years prior to the Six-Day War, that area, as well as Jerusalem itself, was still under Arab control and was technically not part of Israel. This discovery was made by Edward Albert Billy Meyer, who was later to become famous for his amazingly clear photographs of extraterrestrial craft hovering over the Swiss landscape near his home in Hinwil, and for his meetings and conversations with extraterrestrials. Meyer was with his friend Isa Rashid when this momentous discovery took place. Rashid was a former priest in the Greek Orthodox Church, who had become friends with Meyer in Meyer's travels throughout the Holy Land. The document was found in a very old tomb, half filled with dirt, into which they had crawled out of curiosity. Beneath a flat rock, they uncovered a package encased in resin containing 4 rolls of text in the Aramaic language. Rashid, who came from a Palestinian family, was able to read some of the ancient text. The 4 scrolls constituted a book with the title The Talmud of Jemmanuel, which we will refer to as the Talmud of Emmanuel, which means God with us. Up to that point, Meyer had reported contacts with an E.T. woman named Asket, but had not yet taken his famous photographs, and had not yet met his now well-known alien contact, the female from the Pleiades known as Simjase. Those events commenced in 1975. Rashid began a formal translation of the scrolls to German for the benefit of Meyer in August 1963, while Meyer resumed his travels on to India and Turkey. By 1970, Rashid had completed translation of 36 chapters. He sent these translations in 2 packages to Meyer's parents in 1974. Amazingly, the post office was able to forward the packages to Meyer, because his parents were no longer at their original address. A letter came to Meyer from Rashid the same way. In that letter, he told Meyer that he had become known to certain authorities who were pursuing him to obtain the book. He said that both Christian and Jewish groups were after him because they knew that the contents were damaging to both religions. Consequently, he fled Jerusalem and took his family to a refugee camp in northern Lebanon. The Israelis bombed several camps in Lebanon in mid-June 1974, and Rashid was convinced that they were attempting to kill him to destroy the book. Rashid moved on to Baghdad, where, in 1976, he and his entire family were indeed assassinated. The Celestial Sons. In the Talmud of Immanuel, we first learn that God is spelled with a small g. He is identified as the great ruler of the voyagers who traveled here through vast expanses of the universe. Clearly, we are dealing here with space travelers from a distant star. And God is the Captain Kirk of this migratory band of settlers on planet Earth. We learn also that God had a celestial son and guardian angel named Simjasa, and that it was he who impregnated an Earth woman, who gave birth to Adam, the first human. Adam is identified as the father of a lineage of terrestrial humans, and also as the father of the white human population. The Talmud of Immanuel then gives the entire genealogy from Adam to Joseph, the father of Immanuel, numbering 80 generations, presumably all of which involve Earth women who gave birth to sons, since all of the descendants have masculine names. Of interest here is that Noah is the 21st, and David, father of Solomon, is the 53rd descendant. This time period equates roughly to that of Sverdlow, who dates the Adam of the human creation at about 40,000 years BCE, only if we count the average of each generation to be about 500 years. However, this could be possible, since Methuselah alone is said to have lived 969 years, according to the King James Version of the Bible. In both cases, the human race was of relatively youthful vintage. We learn in the Talmud of Immanuel that Mary was impregnated by a celestial son named Gabriel, who was of the direct lineage of Raziel. It is implied that Raziel is very high in the hierarchy, and is perhaps at the same level as Simjasa. The Talmud of Immanuel says that this fulfills the word of God, the ruler of those who traveled from afar, who conveyed these words through the prophet Isaiah. Behold, a virgin will be impregnated by a celestial son, before she is married to a man before the people. This places Immanuel, or Jesus, basically at the same level as Adam, since they were both fathered directly by a celestial son. Joseph, Mary's husband-to-be, was not very pleased at this turn of events when he learned of it, and considered canceling the wedding. While he was thinking about it, a guardian angel sent by Gabriel told him, "Behold, God and his followers came far from the depths of space, where they delivered themselves from a strong bondage, and created here a new human race and home with the early women of this earth. Do not leave her, because the fruit of her womb is chosen for a great purpose. Marry her in all openness, so that you may be husband and wife before the people." For the most part, the rest of the Talmud of Immanuel adheres closely to the New Testament events until it reaches the narrative of the resurrection and what followed. There it becomes a very different and surprising story. This will be discussed in the next chapter. The story of the creation of Adam differs somewhat from Sverdlow's version. In the Talmud, Adam is created from only one ET race, whereas according to Sverdlow, 12 ET races plus the reptilians combine their DNA to create the first human. Moreover, in the Talmud of Immanuel, the human females were already here, while Sverdlow follows the account in Genesis, where it says, "Male and female he created them." The ET race that created Adam, according to the Talmud of Immanuel, does seem to be somewhat equivalent to the Elohim, the extraterrestrial human race that was chosen by the other 11 races to manage the human creation. The Talmud of Immanuel narrative appears to be a simplification of the actual events. However, the Talmud of Immanuel's story of the birth of Jesus accords closely with Sverdlow's account, both agreeing that the father of Jesus was an extraterrestrial.